you want to test how evolved you are as a person, the holidays provide an annual testing ground of spiritual maturity. It's easy to be blissful while sitting on the beach, while hiking by yourself in a woods, or savoring a beautiful sunset. But as the saying goes, our family can push our buttons because our family members are the ones that sewed on our buttons in the first place. Our various complexes and neuroses are often forged in our childhood family systems. But the corollary of that, I mean, very honestly, is that those same triggers, those same buttons can be really the invitation into what spiritual work do we need to do to really find some inner freedom and some liberation in this life. In our highly mobile world, it is possible to spend the majority of one's time with people who share our general worldview, so returning home for the holidays can be a culture shock and a reminder of the work that has to be done to bridge the divides in our world. Or it may be the case that your family is your tribe who supports you and with whom you strongly identify, in which case, just turn on whichever news channel you don't normally watch for a reminder of the problems that our nation faces that are dividing us into factions. The new Jim Crow and mass incarceration, the epidemic of mass shootings and multiple interpretations of the Second Amendment, climate change deniers, and the Paris Climate Summit. We can't even agree as a nation on Happy Holidays versus Merry Christmas. So this morning, I'd like to share with you some insights from Chris Stedman. He's an interfaith activist and the executive director of the Yale Humanist Community at Yale University. And I'd like to share with you some of what he has to say and what he has found in his own experience about how we can try to navigate the divisive factions in our country. In his mid-20s, he published a memoir titled Faithiest. Has anybody heard the term faithiest before? I had not. Okay, we have one. Most people have not. Prior to encountering Stedman's book, I had never heard that word faithiest. Imagine the word faith and the word atheist, and then put them together into faithiest. And when Stedman, though, first heard that word hurled at him, it was not a compliment. He was attending a public forum on how atheists and agnostics and other non-religious or non-theistic people should approach religion. And what he noticed was he had gone there for some help on that advice, but he was finding that panelist after panelist was speaking only negatively and angrily about religion. And so when he tried to make a point about how religion had actually helped sustain the work of justice figures like Mahatma Gandhi and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., someone stood up and quickly retorted, "Oh, you're one of those atheists. You're not a real atheist. We've got a name for people like you, faithiest," which also kind of has the connotations of fake atheist. As a young, burgeoning secular humanist, these were stinging words that reminded him of what he had heard his whole childhood, that he wasn't a real Christian, that he could never be a real Christian because he was gay. The late astronomer, cosmologist, and public intellectual Carl Sagan wrote a book titled The Demon-Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark. And in that, one passage says that Sagan wrote, "The chief deficiency that I see in the skeptical movement is its polarization. It's us versus them dynamic, the sense that we have a monopoly on the truth and that those other people who believe all those stupid doctrines are morons, and if you're sensible, you'll listen to us, and if not, to hell with you." Not literally, but you know what he means. Sagan continues, "This is non-constructive. It does not get our message across." Stedman writes that as a young person who had been alienated from traditional religion and had no desire to return to traditional religion, he sought out secular humanism, hoping to find a community that would be bound by ethical and humanitarian ideals. Instead, he found a lot of anger and vitriol, and it left him feeling isolated and sorely discouraged by a group that he hoped might be his tribe. I will confess, however, that when confronted with the ways that fundamentalist religions continue to inspire racism and sexism and homophobia in our world, as well as the ways that fundamentalist religion emboldens climate change deniers and in extreme cases inspires terrorist attacks, there is part of me that can understand that ancient rationalist enlightenment hope that humanity will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. That humanity will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. Keep in mind, I'm a minister, not a priest. Stedman challenges us to consider that such violent, reactionary approaches tend to sow the seeds of their own defeat by turning off even would-be supporters. And although Chris Stedman is not a Unitarian Universalist, it is not surprising that his memoir was published by Beacon Press, our own UU publishing house. Unitarian Universalism is a big tent religion. We draw explicitly from six diverse sources, which are listed on the back of each week's order of service. And I think it is quite significant that both Christian theism, source 4, and secular humanism, source 5, are together still only two of our six sources. Together, Christianity and humanism, often presented as this giant divide, only comprise one-third of the big tent of Unitarian Universalism. The other two-thirds include direct experience, which you know to be true because you've experienced it firsthand. The words and deeds of social justice activists, the wisdom of all the world's religions, as well as earth-centered spiritualities. And although Stedman remains a convinced atheist worldview, his humanism has led him to increasingly become involved in interfaith circles, because he's become convinced that if we're going to create the world that we dream about, interfaith circles have to include a secular humanist voice. And he's come to see that criticism of "you're a faith theist" actually as a compliment. That being said, one of Stedman's biggest critics is the scientist and one of the most, if not the most popular, atheist blogger on the internet, P.Z. Myers, who promotes a quite hard-edged approach to all religion, not just fundamentalism. To give you just one taste of what Myers has written about extensively and many, many times, Myers writes, "I say screw the polite words and the careful rhetoric. It's time for scientists to break out the steel-toed boots and the brass knuckles and get out there and hammer on the lunatics and the idiots." Stedman, in contrast, believes that a much more likely to be successful path to a better world is found in this quote. He says, "I want to live in a world in which love is more commonplace, and that I think the way to get there is to be more loving and more compassionate and more generous, especially with those with whom one differs." Stedman continues with some of the wisdom that is highly applicable to Unitarian Universalism as we seek to grow together in one big tent amidst all our diversity. He writes that religious pluralism is neither coexistence nor consensus. So coexistence is just, we just all happen to be in the same room. He's like, that's not pluralism. And neither is it consensus, saying that we have to all come to agreement about one thing. He says, religious pluralism is the active engagement of religious diversity to a constructive end. So it means that diversity has to be there and talking with each other and saying, how can we act together? Not agree, but how, you know, we don't have to all believe alike to love alike. He says that diversity is a mere descriptive fact, but pluralism is an achievement. And it has at least three essential components: respect for individual religious or non-religious identity, mutually inspiring relationships, and common action for the common good. That vision is strongly akin to what we seek to achieve here at UUCF, a place where every person's inherent worth and dignity is respected. That's Stedman's respect for everyone's religious or non-religious identity. A place where we come together to support and learn from one another, that's Stedman's mutually inspiring relationships. And a place in which we join together to work for peace and justice, that's Stedman's common action for the common good. Stedman writes that, "In my youth, being right held ultimacy. I valued precision and accuracy, and I was sure to correct anyone that I felt was in the wrong. I thought I was doing people a favor by correcting them. Surely they would want to know. Now I strive to lead with listening instead of lecturing," and he's found that he's gotten much better results. Or to again quote Carl Sagan, this time on the need to respect all human life, even from a purely secular humanist perspective. Sagan writes, "Every one of us in the cosmic perspective is precious. If another human disagrees with you, let him or her live. In 100 billion galaxies, you will not find another human being." In 100 billion galaxies. In a similar spirit, a few weeks ago, I shared with you a short poem by the late Israeli poet Yehud Amichai, titled "The Place Where You Are Right." I invite you to hear it once more. "From the place where we are right, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard, and it is trampled like a yard. But doubts and loves, they dig up the world like a mole, like a plow, and a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood." I encourage you in the coming days and weeks as we approach winter solstice, the darkest day of the year, to experiment with starting not from the place where you think you are right, but instead of taking the risk of sharing stories of what are your doubts and what do you love, and then inviting and listening to the stories of others of what do they love, where are their doubts. In Stedman's experience, an authentic, robust, engaged religious pluralism, as opposed to just a description of mere diversity, is achieved through sharing personal stories most successfully and regularly. I'll conclude with just one example. As an atheist and as a humanist seeking to create a better world, Stedman was working in an assisted living home. One day, a resident named Marvin that he had been assigned to came up to him and asked him to read a book to him. And Stedman had often done this in the past, but this time the book that Marvin pulled off the shelves was an ancient, well-worn one. It was Marvin's prayer book. Stedman was hesitant, and he knew, you know, he briefly thought through in his head, you know, I could actually call in a different resident who isn't an atheist to read this Christian prayer book to Marvin, and that would be totally fine and totally within what was allowed with the job description. But he instead began to read, and as he did so, Marvin visibly relaxed in a way that he hadn't seen before, and the gratitude was evident on his face. Stedman writes, "An unexpected feeling overtook me as I read this prayer book to Marvin. Relief. I had participated in a religious act with Marvin, and I felt neither a strong desire to return to my Christian roots nor a disdain for his beliefs, as I so often had in the past from seeing any form of religious expression since I had left Christianity. In a way, reading that prayer to Marvin felt like a conversion experience to a different kind of atheism and a different kind of humanism. It was profoundly different than simply doing my job at the assisted living center, and it was entirely unlike previous times when I had read non-religious books to Marvin. I could tell by the way he sat on the bed instead of pacing the room like he normally did that the prayer meant something very profound to him. I realized that I couldn't really decipher why the prayer was so important to him, but I could decipher that it was profoundly meaningful to him in a profound way. And because I had shared in this significant area of his life, our relationship going forward was much more honest and much more real. We have an unusual and important opportunity every week here at UUCF when we gather. Multiple times each month, we have an atheist, humanist, agnostic discussion group. Multiple times each month, we have a Buddhist Sangha, a Buddhist fellowship who meets together. We have multiple times each month an Earth-centered spirituality group. This morning, we had our monthly progressive Christian fellowship. We have chalice communities where we can share together our spiritual journeys. Places where we can talk about our doubts and where we can share our loves and where we can share our experiences. Peter Rollins writes about, and I invite you, there are people, no doubt, in this room who, we have sort of overlapping Venn diagrams if you mapped us all on where we fit with the six sources. If there are people you know well, but maybe know they go to the Buddhist fellowship, but that's not really your thing, or the pagan fellowship, or the atheist discussion group, maybe at some point, make a time to share with them some of your doubts and some of your loves. And remember, it's not about skeptically inquiring about what you think their doubts should be. It's about sharing your doubts about yourself, right? Not your doubts about them. So, important caveat. Peter Rollins has a practice that he calls the public speaker, that he talks about reverse evangelism, that one of the things that's been important for his own spiritual growth is that a few times every year, he goes to a religious community that he's never been a part of before. Conveniently here, you can do it all within our building. And he just goes to their service with the goal of opening his heart and mind to seeing what is it about this community that is good news to them and that is supportive to them. And it's just a way of opening his heart to, not to become that, he thinks that's pretty unlikely, but just to better understand what's meaningful to them. So that practice of reverse evangelism, I'll leave you with one final point. I had a mentor one time who, after an evening worship service, invited us to reflect on it, and he was setting us up, but he said, invited us to say, what didn't work, or was there anything that didn't work for you about this worship service? And people had, of course, various things. We're all critics. And he said, I want to invite you to consider when you enter worship services in the future that it's actually not just about you, Narcissus. You know, that it's about this collective experience, that coming together in this Unitarian Universalist service is actually a group spiritual practice, and that's different than your individual spiritual practice, and it can accomplish actually different things, I would invite you to consider, that are actually possible, that there are things we can do together and experience together as a group that are different from what one can do alone in your personal spiritual journey. But to experience that, you have, it is much easier if you're open to saying that 70% of the service worked for me, 80% of the service worked for me, 90%, 99% worked for me, and that maybe that 1% or 10% or 15% that didn't, that part might actually have been the most important part to one or more people in the room. And that making space for that, making a hospitable space for that, that's part of what pluralism looks like, and it can be incredibly healthy and life-giving. So I invite you to consider that.